Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, I'm going to date myself here, but to be honest, I really wasn't very old when the book Love Story by Eric Segal came out. But even at that young age, I thought there was something terribly wrong with its premise. Love means never having to say you're sorry. It didn't make much sense then, and it makes even less sense to me now. Now, I don't know if people took that line to heart, but it seems to me that the three hardest words in the English language to say are not, I love you, but actually, I am sorry. Apologies, meaningful and heartfelt apologies, not the generic mistakes were made kind, seem to leave those who need to hear them unfulfilled and those in the position to offer them breaking out in a cold sweat. So the question is it really necessary for apologies to be so difficult? Is there a way to make them easier and therefore more common? So to address this question, I'm joined by author and licensed clinical social worker, Robert Taibbi. Robert, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about this really, really important topic.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
So you wrote a recent article that appears on the psychologytoday.com website. Basically, you put it right out there, The Art of the Apology. And this caught my attention because I'm always looking for ways to help people get more comfortable with this. So why do apologies matter? And what is it about apologies that makes them so dang difficult?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. Yeah, for some folks, it's probably what you said. It's probably the hardest things to ever say. The first part of the question, why are they important? Is because I do a lot of work with couples and families, and life is about kind of making mistakes and stumbling over yourself and other people. And in order to keep a relationship going, you got to fix it. It's kind of like when the car breaks down, you don't abandon the car, you have to like get it fixed. And so apology is kind of the same thing, where you stumble on something and something breaks down in the relationship. You don't want to just kind of ignore it and make the radio go louder and hope the sound goes away.
I think some people do.
A lot of people do that, yeah. That kind of works for a while. So the idea of apologizing is simply that. It's to kind of repair a wound. Because I've met them, you've met them, couples and families and people in relationships where they don't do that, it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts. The wounds just kind of keep build up. And then eventually somebody hits the bottom line, and they say, I can't take it anymore. And they've stirred up all this resentment, not only about the wounding itself, but the fact that it's not acknowledged. And that's what apologies are about. Acknowledging that, I did something that hurt your feelings. Where people get stuck is they get caught into, I only apologize if I know I absolutely did something wrong, and then we get into arguments about whose reality is right. You're just too sensitive. You're always assuming the worst, whatever.
Right, and I always love those arguments over reality. And it's like, yeah, if you don't have a video or an audio recording, then nobody's going to be able to prove exactly what was said because we actually remember it differently. And that's, and you're talking about the idea of the person who will only apologize if they are crystal clear that they somehow were in the wrong. And when I run into people like that, my answer is, have you ever said to your child when they fall down and hurt themselves, oh, I'm so sorry? Or if a friend loses their parent, and you go, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. It's like, well, did you kill the person? No.
Right.
You didn't push your kid down on the playground either. But
sure.
But somehow we don't seem to be able to connect that dot when, you know, we really didn't intend to cause any kind of hurt, but that's kind of what happens.
Right, right. And again, I think that's where the rubber meets the road. It's about that. People get stuck in the idea that it is about whether it's right or wrong and whether I really did commit this sin or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, then we kind of get into the weeds, and that's not the purpose of an apology. Apology is just acknowledging, you know, that the person was hurt, and even, you know, intentionally or not intentionally, it doesn't really matter. But the fact that the person was hurt, you want to acknowledge that that's not what you hope to do in the relationship, you know? It's taking responsibility. It's called being grown up.
Oh, now there's a concept for you.
Right, right. And we know people where they don't do that. You know, they always blame other people for stuff. You know, all the talk these days about narcissism. You know, people who are narcissistic, they always blame other people. They never take responsibility. They always deflect.
Well, I mean, you know, and it's really interesting because, you know, and you see this with businesses. You see this, you know, you get lawyers involved. It's like, I mean, you know, don't ever admit anything because you're opening things up. You know, but sometimes just the apology can,
right,
you know, because it's about being heard. It's about being heard, and it's about being recognized. And sometimes that apology is all that's needed for that person to feel not necessarily whole, because that's, you know, that takes some other stuff, but at least
sure,
it's the first step to healing, that it's like, oh my gosh, somebody is recognizing that there was something about this interaction or event or whatever that was not okay, and they're
sure
taking their part of it. And I mean, you know, and it's the thing that about intention. It's like, I know that my husband would never intentionally hurt me. So
right,
when I'm hurt and it's coming from him, it's, he doesn't know something. And so I need to tell him. I need to say, you know, I know that you probably didn't mean this, but that thing that just happened really hurt my feelings.
Yeah. 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 And that's a, you know, I'm glad you said that. That's a really good point, particularly in the beginning of a relationship. I spend a lot of time when I work with couples, for example, where I talk a lot about, you know, knowing what each other's emotional wounds are. And what emotional wounds is about is just, what are you particularly sensitive to? You know, I'm sensitive to being micromanaged, or I'm sensitive to being criticized, or I'm sensitive to not being appreciated. It's usually one of a handful of things. But
right,
part of navigating the relationship and truly understanding the other person is knowing what that sensitivity is. You know, if I know my wife is particularly sensitive to being criticized and micromanaged, that doesn't mean I have to bite my tongue and never say anything. I just need to be considerate and careful. And exactly what you're saying, you know, the first few months or years in a relationship, the fact that she says that really hurt my feelings or that felt critical or whatever it was, is important information for me to know.
Right.
In terms of navigating this relationship.
And I'm so glad you talk about sensitivities, because that's really what it is. And even though my husband knows what two of my major sensitivities are, on occasion, he has no idea that what he is about to do is going to trigger one of them. He only knows
sure
after the fact when it's like, I have this reaction. And he
sure
doesn't. And he never intends to do it. So it's like I tell people, it's like a minefield, and I know where all the mines are located. My husband
yep
only knows where some of them are located. So on occasion he'll step on one. And then he apologizes for, you know, what he did, and he's learning. And then I also apologize for my reaction, because
good, yeah,
I still own what I did.
Right. Yeah. And again, you know, you don't want to get into whose reality is right. This is where people go, oh, you're just too sensitive, you know,
oh, yeah.
and kind of dismiss how they're feeling. You know, you don't want to go there. It's about
that adds insult to injury.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the other thing that you said is also true, I think, which is, you know, kind of what you were saying about lawyers, where I think sometimes it's family culture. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's just the person's individual psychology. But there is sort of this association that if I apologize, I'm now vulnerable. You know, I'm in a one down kind of position that for whatever reason, their view of the world is if you kind of admit mistakes or admit any kind of vulnerability, people can take advantage of you. And so they stop. They stop doing that. And obviously what they wind up doing is they have self-fulfilling prophecies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I want to go to something else because I talked about it in the beginning. And you know, one of the ways that people apologize is not really apologize, kind of the proverbial, well, mistakes were made. Like somehow they're completely unattached to any living being. It's just like something out there. So what are some other ways that are ineffective apologies or that people shouldn't actually do? I mean, we talked about the you're too sensitive, which, of course, isn't an apology at all.
Right.
But specifically
right.
about apologies.
Yeah, yeah, there's a couple of things. I mean, one is I think, where some folks get into sort of a power struggle, blink contest standoff. You know, I'll apologize, but you have to apologize first. You know, and they kind
right.
of, you know, they have this power struggle mm-hmm. for forever about this, which obviously doesn't particularly go anywhere. And then you get the people who do the mumbled, sorry.
Right.
You know, and it's basically to just kind of get the other person off their back or to get, you know, to just kind of put an end to the conversation. And that's where what you were saying before, it's not a sincere apology. They're just kind of going through the motions. It's kind of like, you know, the mom who makes the six-year-old apologize to the friend who hit him on the playground. You know, the kid isn't really into sincere apologies. He's just doing it because his mother told him to say he's sorry.
Or tell your brother you're sorry. I mean, yeah, it's even worse within families. It's like, yeah, I'm not sorry.
Right, right. I'm just saying it so mom doesn't, you know, put me in timeout for the rest of my life. Right. So part of it is that, and then part of it is, to have not a conversation about your crimes, but just to kind of help what you were saying before. You know, it doesn't have to be long. It could be a three-minute conversation, but it's about both sides kind of deconstructing what happened, you know, enough to learn a lesson from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I talk to couples who talk about having this big argument on Saturday night or whatever has gone on, usually my next statement is, okay, what did you learn from this argument? You know, what's uh-huh. the moral of the story of this argument? And partly it's about the content of it, you know, whatever they were fighting about, and we need to, like, you know, get on the same page about raising the kids.
Yeah, or
we need
to that.
Whatever. But the other part is about the process. You know, the other part is about, yeah, you know, when you start wagging your finger at me or you start bringing up the past or whatever it is, that's the stuff that pushes my buttons or that's the stuff that hurts my feelings. And again, what you were saying before, you know, life is a process of elimination, where you make mistakes and you learn from them. And so, you know, for any couple in any kind of relationship, just spending a few minutes just kind of deconstructing it, not to rub salt in anybody's wounds, not uh-huh. to get defensive, not to do any of that kind of stuff. This is where I have a hard time with people who text stuff.
Oh.
you're going back to evidence. You know, I can't, you've seen it, I've seen it, where I have couples coming in, you know, and they start, can I read the text? Can I read the text?
Right.
You know, and then
yes.
they start, you know, and it's like a courtroom, you know, evidence, you know, here's what he said. But of course, you know what the other person, I said, I didn't say it like that. I just wrote
right.
that. It doesn't mean I was angry. I wasn't saying that. You're the one who put in the period there or the exclamation. It just gets crazy. And
yeah,
so
yeah,
I have a real hard time.
Yeah, I mean, even if you stick in an emoji, it's like, it's sometimes
yeah.
still, because, I mean, and I've talked about this on the show before about,
yeah.
you know, in communication, the actual words we use is less
right.
than 10% of what gets communicated.
Absolutely,
and so,
absolutely.
You know, to me, texting works really well if it's just, can you stop by the grocery store on the way home and get the belt? Or
right,
I'm
yeah.
late, I'll be there in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
You know, as opposed
yeah.
to these people who try to have, you know, and unfortunately, I've gone a little crazy, more with my daughter than my son. Because my daughter would be like texting. I said, you know, if you just actually dialed the phone, you would handle this conversation. It's like,
oh, Mom,
I mean,
that's since 1980s. What
oh,
are you talking about?
I know,
right.
I know. It's, you know, right. well, they have to deal with the Luddite that is their mother. But you know, and I think part of that is because there's a sense of safety, and I get that. I understand
right.
why people want to use these technologies, and we're
right.
going to talk about a better way to do that in just a minute. But I know that in the article, you basically said if what you text is "I am sorry," that's okay.
Right.
Go
right, 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 right.
So, This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm talking with author and licensed clinical social worker Robert Taibbi about the art of the apology. And if you struggle with either giving an apology or, on the flip side, actually getting one, you're not alone. A real apology can go a long way towards repairing a breach, even one that wasn't intended. So being able to apologize well is a skill that can put your marriage on solid footing. And if you'd like to know how to do that, I encourage you to contact me today and schedule your free, no obligation, Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning strategy session. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. Or you can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Now, I want to get back to the conversation about how to apologize well. So, Robert, what are some more effective ways of apologizing? We say, it's like, don't do it by text.
Right, don't do it by text. We got that. Yeah, I'm a big fan of doing emails, and I have a couple
okay.
of reasons for that. I know
yeah,
that's kind of old school as
too.
Well,
mm-hmm.
right? For a couple of reasons, though, and one is that it gives you a chance to the person who's going to apologize. It gives you a chance to kind of craft your words. I mean, you kind of
uh-huh.
do it with texting, but just physically, in terms of doing an email, you have more space. You can think more broadly. So it gives you a chance to kind of pick your words. You can carefully kind of craft what you want to say. And rather than, I think sometimes for a lot of folks, even talking on the phone is difficult, you know,
uh-huh.
on both sides. If you call somebody up, you yourself are kind of sort of put on the spot and you're trying to say something, you know, and you catch the other person off guard oftentimes and they're kind of taken by surprise and they
uh-huh.
don't know what to say and they can't really process what you're talking about or they're in a bad mood already and they're stressed out, you know, and so they overreact and whatever. So the idea behind having an email is you can write out. You know, back
yeah.
back 30 years ago, we'd be sending a letter, but we're not going to
mm-hmm.
do that anymore. But essentially, what you put in the email is kind of what you learned in school. You know, you got your topic sentence. I'm writing to you because I just want to apologize for whatever I said the other day or whatever. The other
uh-huh.
part of it, though, is now you put into it the backstory. The backstory about why you said what you said, not in a defensive kind of way. You know, well, you
critical.
Said this first, and so I was just doing that.
Right.
But more in terms of, you know, what I talk to folks about is you talk about soft emotions. Soft emotions like concern and worry and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. And you kind of explain, you give the backstory about, you know, what was going on inside you. Because what they, you know, people see your behaviors, they have no idea what your intentions are. So your job is to explain your intentions. You know, I wasn't trying to hurt your feelings. I was just getting really worried and anxious when you were talking about this. You know, and I'm sorry if I came on too strong or whatever it was. And the other advantage of having email is you can put into it, it's kind of like planning the conversation, put into it anything you think the other guy is going to think. So you say, I'm not trying to be critical. You know, I'm not making it sound like, I don't want you to think it's your fault. I'm not saying, you know, whatever you think they're going to think, put it in there at the front end. So you're sort of emotionally cutting them off at the pass so they can better hear what you're saying.
But also so you, not making assumptions about what they're thinking, because that's all
that's
thinking
right.
and feeling. That,
right.
That's a critical
right.
component too. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have time and space to kind of craft it, and then you send it off. Now, part B is what I'm going to say is you're not done. Part B now is you kind of laid the work, and again, the advantage on the other side is they have time to you're not calling them up at 10 o'clock at night when they're tired and have three beers and they can't process what you're saying. They can get the email, they can read it over, they got a chance to kind of consider what you're really saying, whatever. Now your job is to follow up. And this is where I would do a phone call.
Okay.
Not a text, not another email, but I call them up and go, you know, and even say that perhaps in the email. Say, you know, I'm not trying to close the door on this topic. I'd like to talk to you about it. I'll give you a call this weekend.
Right,
so
or if it's your spouse, say, you know, can we talk about it? I would really love to take some time on
yeah,
chat
yeah, yeah.
to
yeah.
talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
and
do, I do a face-to-face.
Yeah, there's a critical piece about the difference between a text and an email, because we were talking earlier about the challenge of it just being words. But with an email, we can let it sit for a little while. I mean, it's just going to sit on our computer or wherever it's going to sit, and it's not going to cause any problem. And we can go back to it later before we actually send it, which, by the way, I actually highly recommend that you give a little bit of time from the time you write it to the time you send it to make sure to go back. Because here's the deal, and this is partially, I think, why we end up in a position where apologies are helpful, is we know what we mean. And so when I write something, I know what I meant to say. Or if I say something, I know what the motivation was. And so I have to separate myself out from that to go, oh, there's another way of reading this that I didn't think about. And that's usually how we ended up in the miscommunication and the challenge and the hurt feelings anyway. It's because I had no idea that it was going to be received in a different way than it was meant.
Right. And the same thing is true on the other side. The person who there's something, again, sort of, psychological about getting a text. You know, our brain is one to kind of just read it right away, you know.
And respond to it right away.
Yeah. And if you get an email at 11 o'clock at night from somebody, you know you're tired, it can sit on your computer. You know, you're not going to have that same physical kind of reaction to have to respond to it. And then you can read it over several times. You know, so the first time you read it, you're going to get a little annoyed, or you're going to feel angry, or you're going to feel hurt, but then you kind of go through it again. And that's the purpose of, you know, having the follow-up as well. So, you know, 3 days later, you call the person up, or you schedule a time to have lunch or something, and now it's to further process it. You know, did you get my email? What'd you think?
Right.
You know, does it make sense?
Yeah, and I do think that an important part of the apology process, whether and probably if somebody's doing it with an email first before actually having a face-to-face, but I think it needs to come somewhere early, probably before the explanation of what was going on inside of my head, is
right.
an acknowledgement, a validation of the mm-hmm. other person being hurt. Because usually
Absolutely.
That's the piece, that if that's that, not there,
right.
then it doesn't matter what else is set. That it's seen
right.
as,
yeah.
oh, you're blowing this off, you don't take it seriously, I'm not important, and now we're back to a whole other level.
Right. And that's what I was saying. It's back to high school, what's your topic sentence? You know, the topic sentence is that, you know, I'm writing to you to, you know, just to apologize for what I said the other day. That's your first sentence, you know, mm-hmm. so you're already setting the tone.
So we're talking about ways in which apologies are helpful and good ways to apologize. But what happens if your apology isn't accepted?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had this is sort of sidebar kind of conversation, but I've had a number of people, for example, where it could have come from either side of the fence, parents or like parents of adult children.
Uh-huh.
I remember seeing, you know, a couple of years ago, they're probably in their 50s. They came in. They have a daughter who was in her 30s. And they came in and they're saying, you know, we just went out to see my daughter for Christmas and we brought Christmas presents to the kids and we had a great time. And now we get this. And it's like a month later. It's like in January. And they're coming in with flopping this email. And what the email is, something the daughter saying, I remember, you know, the time when I was a kid that you never did this and that. It was kind of this ranty email. And the bottom line is, and never talk to me again.
Wow.
and this is not, I've heard this a lot. This is not uncommon.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Particularly for people in their early to mid-30s. I think they go through a period of kind of reflecting on their past to kind of look at it from a different perspective. Anyhow, the parents come in and they go, we don't know what to do about this. You know, and what I usually say is, and they say, never talk to me again. You know, so they uh-huh. go, all right. So we're kind of in this bind where they're saying, never talk to me again, but we also want to respond. So, you know, what I usually wind up suggesting is go ahead and respond. And apologize.
Exactly.
We're
mm-hmm.
not going to get into whose reality is right and what are you talking about and, you
and
know,
why are you picking up stuff from 20 years ago and,
right,
and all that.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You can not, don't do that. You can accept her reality and you want to apologize. You same for the same thing, intentional or not, you want to apologize because her feelings are hurt.
And
now,
I think that's a really critical point that we're,
right.
we're not, yes, there may be something about our behavior that we need to examine and own and apologize for, but most of the time, it's about the other person's hurt feelings.
Right. And so to answer your question is, so now they do that, you know, they send an email back or they leave a voicemail message or whatever, and sometimes the person will say, I told you, I don't talk to me ever again.
Door, right?
What don't you understand about no? And so that, to answer your question, what happens if the people don't respond? You know, if you send the email or, you know, this parents had to deal with. The bottom line is, all right, you try one more time. You know, you try one more time. You offer the olive branch. You try to heal the wound as best you can. And at a certain point, you have to stop. I mean, at a certain point, you realize what's the best you can do. I mean, I'm always saying this to clients that I see. You know, the bottom line is usually what's the best you can do? Well, the best you can do is be generous. The best you can do is be clear. The best you can mm-hmm. do is accept responsibility for your actions. You know, the
right.
best you can do is help people understand your intentions and what makes you tick so they don't look at you through a distorted lens. That's the best you can do. Once you do this, you're done. You know, you've done the best you can. Now, again, do you cut them off? Do you never talk to them again? Depends. You know, what I said to this couple is, you know, I would keep sending, you know, the Christmas cards to the grandkids, you know,
uh-huh.
or to
yeah,
the birthday present, just
cards.
So you don't yep. shut down the door, you know, just so you don't totally close it off, because what happens is if you're having one of these longstanding feuds, it does become a blink contest, you know, where because the door is closed, now it becomes harder and harder to open it up. So you send
right.
an email, you check in once a week or every couple of months and go, hope you're doing well, a one-liner, and they'll throw it out.
Right.
You know, and that's fine.
Well,
you're doing the best you can. You're trying to keep the door open.
Yeah, and I think it's important to recognize in this, and I think this may be, you know, part of history with apologizing and whether or not we should or whatever, is that we cannot control how it is received. We can only control our effort in doing
yes.
it. And if it's not received well, that one, we could take a look and say, okay, did I not fully apologize? Was there something that I was missing?
Sure.
But if I look through it and go, no, I really think I did a pretty excellent job of apologizing, and then the other person is either not ready or not willing to accept it, it's letting that go.
Right.
Not necessarily letting the person go, but letting that go. And then if this does seem to be a pattern of behavior, then there's a real question about, you know, I'm really curious about what goes on with the apologies that have been given and not received.
Right.
You know, what's that about?
Right.
And you know,
yeah.
it's kind of because sometimes, again, that's about learning that maybe they wanted something acknowledged that, again, we didn't know about. And of course, now this goes back into the mind reading school of relationships. It's like,
sure.
I mean, you got to tell, and it's like, well, I shouldn't have to tell you why I'm upset. It's like, oh my gosh, oh please.
You say why you're upset. Yeah,
right.
Right.
Because again, that's the grown up thing to do, and we're not expecting other people to do this. And you know, and it can be really hard, but the fact that an apology isn't accepted doesn't absolve us of giving it in the first place.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember, and you know, this is the other thing that gets a little. I remember seeing somebody a few years ago, who, the guy was middle aged, and I don't know what particularly triggered it, but he had some real remorse and regret about how he ended a relationship with a woman when he was like in college or something.
Uh-huh.
You know, and he just felt bad about it. You know, he said, you know, it's kind of, I'm happily married now, you know, and I haven't talked to this person in 20 years, but this, for some reason, this has come up and it's kind of nagging me. I feel bad about what I did. And he came in because he was trying to sort out what to say and should he say something and should he not. It was kind of actually difficult to kind of sort through. And the difficulty
uh-huh.
part was he was clear that he felt like he wanted to say something. But the difficult part was he stirring up old wounds, you know, or was
mm-hmm.
he not knowing and having seen the person in 20 years?
Sure.
He had no idea how the other person might react,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, should he or should not? And that was a difficult call for him. I mean, he had to sort it through. And we spent time just kind of crafting the email, you know, exactly what would he want to say. And part of it, he put that in the email. You know, he
right.
said, I know this may come in as seem sort of out of nowhere, and I hope it doesn't upset you or just kind of stir up old feelings. I'm just trying to. But those kind of situations can get hard to sort through, you know,
sure.
if it's something from the long past. But again, he did it because he needed to get some closure.
Right, because it was something that he felt a responsibility for. And so that,
right.
you know, and I think that's an important thing that we can – that this is a process and we can always learn to do it better.
Right.
And whether that's with somebody in our life now or somebody who hasn't been in our life, or even going back to say maybe the couple and their daughter, that there's an old
sure.
wound that,
right.
you know, I may not have even known had happened, but obviously
right.
it was something that upset this other person. And,
sure.
you know, am I willing to step up now. So this has been a really interesting conversation. So, Robert, can you tell people where they can learn more about you and read some of the wonderful stuff that you write about the art of the apology?
Sure. I do have a Psychology Today blog. It has about 300 articles on there, from everything from all parts of relationships to how to cope with anxiety and children. It's on Psychology Today. It's the blog is called Fixing Families. And if you just kind of plug in my name, Robert Taibbi, T-A-I-B-B-I, you'll find a whole slew of articles, and the one on apologies is right there. Also, there's one about how to heal estranged relationships. So kind of what else we were talking about is on there. And then I also have my website. I have articles on there as well. And I'm in private practice here in Virginia.
And so what's that website?
It's my name. It's bobtaibbi.com.
Okay, terrific. So what I want people to remember is that giving an apology doesn't mean you did anything, quote, unquote, wrong in the absolute value sense of the word. It means that there was somehow a breach in your relationship and somebody is hurting. And accepting an apology doesn't mean that the behavior, the breach, was okay, only that you are releasing the hurt around it. Pride gets in the way of taking both of these actions, and quite frankly, damage is what results. So you can act in loving ways, or you can be prideful. You can't be both, and the choice and the health of your relationship is up to you. So hopefully you got something from this, and hopefully you'll keep listening. And until next week, stay loving.